Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, a show where we cover the news from the video game world, the industry, the news that have been happening in the past couple of weeks. My name is Patrick Beja, and I've noticed that I've started speaking a little bit faster in these intros, and maybe with a little bit less of a French accent, so hopefully the listeners appreciate that improvement. Is it an improvement? I don't know, maybe. So as I said, my name is Patrick Beja. We're going to be talking about Bungie splitting away from Activision. We're going to be talking about EA essentially giving up on Star Wars. Well, not really, but one Star Wars game at least. And we're going to be talking about a bunch of big marketing pushes that have brought us a lot of gaming news and other things. Maybe talk about whether or not we're going to be seeing a new console in 2019, at least announced, and some other things. And to help me do that, I'm very, very glad to be welcoming for the first time on the show, Emma Kent from Eurogamer. Hey, Emma.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
I'm very happy we could finally do this.
We eventually got around to doing it.
You've been very busy. Can you tell the listeners a few words about yourself before we start?
Yeah, sure. So I've been doing reporting for about 6 months now. I started with the Eurogamer internship in the summer. I did that for 3 months. Apparently they liked what I did because I'm still here. So I'm kind of quite new to the world of games journalism, beyond kind of doing it on an amateur level when I was writing for my uni paper. And yeah, it's brilliant. I love it. Every day there's something very weird cool happening.
So you're living the dream. Essentially, you're doing lot of people would love to be doing, and you're enjoying it.
Yeah, no, I get to write puns about video games for a living. So, I mean,
Eurogamer is really good on puns, so I guess that's a big factor in hiring people. I was going to make a joke about you still loving it because you've been doing it for only a short while. Soon, I'm certain the horrible grayness of the grind of the job will beat you, but not yet. So that's good.
Yeah, no, still fresh.
The other joke I could make would be that you're young, and so of course you're playing Fortnite all the time, but that wouldn't be a joke because you actually are. So
I know. Oh gosh. I started playing Fortnite kind of ironically because I was like, oh, this will be funny. You know, like, I don't really like it. Oh, I'm just going to see what it's about. And then I actually started enjoying it. And now I'm at the point where undeniably I end up writing a load of Fortnite articles quite genuinely. Do you enjoy it?
You're not alone. Yeah. It seems it's quite popular. And you know, I keep saying on this show, I'm sure listeners are tired of me saying this almost every episode, but Epic is doing such a good job with Fortnite and keeping it interesting and fresh for a game that doesn't have like a intrinsic storyline, or like they keep players engaged. And recently they did it again. I think it was today or maybe yesterday, that huge snowstorm thing.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I watched that. I think it was yesterday with the giant kind of Ice King in the sky, and everyone just kind of stops fighting for a second, where they should, at least, if the truce holds out, to kind of watch these events. And yeah, it's great. It's a really kind of communal feeling that you don't get in many games. And it's fairly regular as well, so it keeps the interest kind of maintained. Yeah. Every few weeks there's something going on.
I think they learned a lot. If we want to trace back the origins of that kind of community management through the game, they learned a lot from Destiny with the secrets. And maybe there's something more, you know, older for that kind of community interaction. But the secrets in Destiny's, I'm a big Destiny fan, so I also talk about this almost every episode, although I don't have enough time to play these days. But They did a lot of these like community-driven secret hunts in Not Forsaken, which is the last expansion in Destiny 2, but The Taken King, right, that's the name I was looking for. And it was really fascinating for the community to take part in, and there's sort of a lighter version in this in Fortnite. World of Warcraft does that too nowadays. It is super efficient as a way of getting people to find fresh interest in your game, and they're doing this super well. So
Exactly. Yeah, continued upkeep and maintenance is the key.
And well, hey, look at that. We're talking about Destiny.
Oh, a
and...
perfect segue.
Oh my God, it's almost like I did it on purpose. Bungie, big news. This is probably the biggest news from the past couple of weeks. Although it might have been one-upped by EA and Star Wars, which we're going to be talking about in just a little bit. But Bungie announced that they are basically getting away, breaking their contract with Activision relating to the development and publishing of Destiny. For those who don't remember, that contract was established, I believe, in 2010, maybe 2011. And we only learned about it a little bit later when Destiny was revealed, I think. And they stipulated that they would be working on that franchise for 10 years together, Activision publishing the game and Bungie, of course, developing it, with a two-year cycle for new titular games like sequels, proper sequels, Destiny 1, 2, 3, every 2 years, and an expansion every other year. Now, of course, things haven't gone that way. The Destiny 2 took 3 years to come out instead of two, and we had another expansion with Destiny, the first one, in the interim, which wasn't super well regarded. It's been on and off. I've talked about Destiny a lot. I think a lot of people know about the story. Of course, the relationship between the two entities has been tense, as we've heard about it for a while now. The imperative being different for both, Activision wanting to make a lot of money with that franchise. I'm sure Bungie wouldn't mind making a lot of money as well, but apparently sales-wise, the results were disappointing to Activision, which probably led to this this amicable-ish separation. And the other big thing there is that Bungie is keeping the rights to the Destiny franchise, which we can speculate, but I'm not sure how Activision let that go. I'm guessing there's a lot of money involved. But Bungie, of course, developer of the Halo series, which when they left Microsoft, they had to let go of Halo. In this case, they're keeping Destiny. The reporting by Jason Schreier specified that there were cheers of joy and laughter when that was announced at an all-hands meeting at the Bungie offices. And so that's the news kind of raw. I wonder what you think about all
history
of this.
History repeats itself, kind of. A lot of people have been celebrating this. I'm not a Destiny player myself, but everyone else in the office is. So I kind of get all of this secondhand feedback about how Destiny is going at the moment. And people generally feel that it's too impenetrable and too hardcore at the moment. And it needs more constant maintenance, and that the kind of annual cycle is kind of damaging the upkeep of the game. This is what I've heard from people who play it. So yeah, the feeling is that hopefully without this cycle, Bungie can focus more on that.
It's definitely it takes away some of the pressure of working with a gigantic company like Activision. For me, and I think the community of hardcore players feels like the game is in a really good place now. But that's interesting that you mention people at your work feel it's difficult to keep the thing going and it's getting a little bit hardcore, because what they tried to do, probably at the behest of Activision with the release of Destiny 2, is to widen the player base and to make it a little bit more approachable. And the result was, maybe they didn't approach that right, but the result was that people were not engaging with the game. The core hardcore community was not engaging with the game as much, and the people who were more casual kind of didn't care enough to keep playing the game. So yeah, it's tough balance.
Speaking from my own experience, I had a go at Destiny 2 earlier this year, and I just kind of bounced straight off it. I'm sorry if that's hurt you as a Destiny fan.
It pains me a little bit, but I understand.
I can't quite put my finger on it. I think it was just you kind of felt like you were thrown straight into the middle of something which you didn't really have a good grasp on at the start. I think it's quite a lot to deal with beyond the shooting mechanics, which do feel great. I have to admit, Destiny's got great shooting.
That's definitely its strength, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't really feel connected with anyone else in the community to start with. And yeah, I put a fair few hours into it and it just didn't click. And yeah, on the other end of that, I would say people in the Eurogamer office are pretty hardcore Destiny players. Definitely like a while back, but even for them, I think they found it's too time consuming now. And I think Bungie recently had to give out a clue for a puzzle because nobody could solve it. It seems like on either end of the scale, they haven't quite got it right with Destiny 2.
I think that's the big issue, and probably part of the reason why the tension was happening between Activision and Bungie is that the game that they were really trying to serve two masters. I think initially Bungie wanted to make a game for everyone. And to go big with the franchise and make kind of a Halo-like product, but with a game-as-a-service mentality that would keep going forever. And I think what they've realized is that it doesn't really work because that kind of game, at least the way they're conceiving it, doesn't appeal to the wide-reaching community. And so, of course, Activision is not getting what they wanted out of it, which is a worldwide blockbusting franchise like Call of Duty. And so they were trying to pull the thing back into that direction, which Bungie wasn't a fan of because they realized that the game, it ended up, you know, I'm sure artists discover what their thing is as they're doing it sometimes, and certainly it's the case for games. And they discovered what Destiny was, and they realized, you know, maybe this game is not what we thought it was going to be in the beginning. So I think, you know, I joked about an amicable separation in the beginning. I think it's easy to paint this split as some kind of horrible dispute where no one is happy and Activision is, of course, the bad guy and Bungie is free from the horrors of big companies and corporate culture. And I'm not quite sure that's it. I think they're realizing that it's not working out for them, right?
I think it was probably mutual from what I've heard. So it's been a few years. It's just a sense that they're not quite compatible for each other.
And I think the big thing is Destiny staying with Bungie. I mean, again, I'm sure there's some money exchange happening there. I wouldn't even be surprised if a part of Destiny 3, whatever it ends up being, revenue or profits goes to Activision. Like, I don't know. Of course, they're not going to have to pay whatever they had to pay for the last 2 years of their contract. So that's some money they can put somewhere else. I'm talking about Activision there. But I wouldn't be surprised if there was some extra money that was staying there because, of course, the franchise was co-developed and Bungie is going to have to do all the publishing, which is not easy, but maybe they're thinking, you know, as we were saying, Destiny is a more core game, and so maybe we don't need to go big on marketing every time and we can self-publish it wherever and keep our core community happy and maybe try something else. I think they got an investment from, was it Tencent or NetEase? Might have been NetEase.
Yeah, NetEase.
Right. NetEase is everywhere. and so they're going to focus on that other franchise as well. They got like 100 million, so they'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And maybe do something else as well and say leave Destiny where it is. I mean, keep developing it.
I think Bungie said they're keeping the same number of developers on Destiny for now.
Yeah.
So it should just be an additional game along with that. But yeah, it will probably be a lot more of them to manage.
For NetEase, I mean.
Yeah,
but I'm wondering if they're not going to do something else as well, maybe. I don't know.
Potentially. I think it's interesting from looking at Activision, that losing Destiny is kind of another big stable IP that they know that they can get money from. It's quite interesting that they were willing to let that go. And as you say, it was probably significant amount of money involved in letting it go. So I believe Activision also let Skylanders go as well, which is another kind of big moneymaker. So now they've kind of got Call of Duty.
That's pretty much it, right?
Yeah. No, they're going to have to look somewhere else for some new IP, I think.
That's a big, I mean, they have Call of Duty, of course, which I don't know how much is going to keep selling. I mean, it sells, but, you know, it's one big thing. They have, like, the Spyro and whatever. Those are, I think, side.
Yeah, well, they're kind of remakes, really, yeah. So.
And so it puts, I'm sure, some increased pressure on Blizzard, even though, you know, Activision is part of Activision Blizzard on the same level as Blizzard. So it's kind of, if Activision Publishing doesn't have a lot of money isn't bringing in a lot of money, it's not Activision Blizzard as a whole that's responsible. But still, they own both companies, so they have to be looking at Blizzard and thinking, hey, do you have, like, other stuff coming out? Because it's been a while. But
it seems like they've been cutting costs at Blizzard lately as well, so they're definitely looking
I've talked about this a lot. I used to work for Blizzard, and I'm very fond of Blizzard games, so I'm not going to dive back into that. But the fact that they're letting Destiny go with Bungie, I think, and the fact that they're splitting up now without a huge, like, yes, there was a little bit of push and pull, some microtransactions added, but as I've said many times, they weren't outrageous in Destiny. But so the big question which you brought up is, what is Activision doing? I don't know. I think they have to be looking for other games to publish or to co-develop or something. They can't just remain with just Call of Duty. It would seem antithetical to what Activision or a big publisher is.
Maybe they'll try and buy some other franchises that are already established. I don't know what they're planning, but they're gonna have to find a new stable IP to go along with Call of Duty. I think you need at least two, and then you can do some weirder other games.
And the thing is, they can't just go and shop around with, you know, some AAA developer. And when Activision, that's why it didn't work out with Bungie, I think. That's my interpretation. When they develop a game, it needs to be like a gigantic franchise. And they would like it to be an annual thing that they can sell a ton of every single year. And this is, you know, not something you can just find off the street. So I don't know. I can't, you know, I'm trying to look at the landscape now. I don't know what developer they could buy. Everyone else is already with a giant developer, a giant publisher.
It's so true. Yeah, no, I guess maybe Activision will need to reconsider its business model. Maybe have a look at constant upkeep games. You know, like, everyone looks to Epic. There's a reason for that.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. But
who knows?
Who knows? Maybe E3 will have some answers for us. Maybe they have been secretly, they've seen this coming, and they have been secretly developing another project, and who knows? Another giant, of course, beloved corporate entity is EA. And every gamer loves EA, right? Just as much as Activision. I think if one company is more hated than Activision, is probably EA. And this bit of news isn't helping. There was a big Star Wars open world game being developed by, was it Visceral? Or was Visceral the company
This one that just got cancelled was EA Vancouver. And one before that was Visceral.
It's the one before, you're right. So
you can't even keep up with all of the cancellations.
So they cancelled that big open world Star Wars game that everyone was looking at and thinking, maybe this is going to be cool. And they just cancel it. And the reasoning for it is apparently that it was too ambitious, and it wasn't going to be released until like 2022. And they looked at it, and they're thinking, we need something sooner. We need something by 2020. So let's cancel that and let's start working on another game that we can release in a year and a half. I'm not sure what to think about this. On the one hand, I'm like, well, if they thought, you know, you prototype games, and if you're thinking it's not going to cut it, or for whatever reason, you don't want to spend 5 years on a game that is risky, you know, this is big stuff. You're putting in, it's easy to look at and think, oh, they just decided they didn't want to pay for a game when they could have invested a little. Like, it's probably hundreds of millions of dollars. Definitely dozens, probably hundreds.
It's not a decision for sure. Yeah.
Like, if you're thinking, you know what, I'm just not feeling this, I think it's okay to say, let's do something else.
I think this one was also in kind of the early stages of development. So I think it got announced about the same time as the Visceral shutdown.
Yeah. They said, about two years, we're shutting down Visceral, and Amy Hanning was working on that one. And then they announced the one that was just canceled. So it's like cancellation after cancellation. I understand why people are angry, especially since LucasArts was dismantled, and Lucasfilm signed a contract with EA to have exclusive rights on Star Wars games, which I understand why Star Wars fans would be angry about, because it's not yielding many games at all. It's like Battlefront 1 and 2.
Yeah. And neither of them have been particularly brilliant.
I think that's
fair
to
say. And then, of course, yeah, Star Wars Battlefront 2, the microtransactions were so controversial that it actually changed attitudes across the entire industry and had that hugely downvoted Reddit comment.
So, see, we have EA to thank for that. So, thank you, EA.
Yeah, that's true. They pushed it so far that nobody else could ever go near it.
But, I mean, that Battlefront 2 ended up being, you know, I think even without the microtransaction issue, both Battlefront are fun. They're okay, but they're not. They didn't set the world on fire.
Yeah, no, I think Star Wars Battlefront 2 is like the first game preview I ever did for my student paper. Mm-hmm. And it was fun and it was pretty and I liked it. And that I wrote all of that before the loot boxes came in. But yeah, no, I don't know. It never quite had a kind of thing to make you keep coming back for it. I quite like the space battles. They're pretty good. Spaceships and that kind of thing. But
I think there's something. I mean, it would be fine if it was one of the, or that series. I understand the idea of thinking, you know, we have Battlefield, let's do that with Star Wars. There's an appeal there. But it's going to stay that kind of multiplayer fun. I think Star Wars calls for something more narrative. And that's what Visceral was working on. That's what EA Vancouver was working on. And we're not going to get any of those. So for a Star Wars fan, it feels like a wasted opportunity. And there's a whole story about who made the deals and who left EA and who left, you know, when Disney bought LucasArts and all of that plays into it. And maybe the result is that no one really wants this deal and no one likes the deal. So their heart is not into it. But it certainly feels like a wasted opportunity for gamers and for Star Wars fans.
Yeah, for sure. And I heard that within EA, I think Jason Schreier said this, that there's a sense that they want, he knows all of this. He said that EA is more focused on kind of lightsaber battle kind of aspect and wants games focused on that. Whereas the thing that was going on at Visceral was much kind of more gritty kind of bounty hunter thing, a bit more like Rogue One or Solo. It's more focused on that. Yeah. So I don't know if if they can't quite decide what to do. Maybe they're also scared about having another backlash like they did with Battlefront 2. I don't know if it's good PR.
If they don't include loot boxes, I think they should be fine. I think they learned that lesson. But
with Star Wars next, they're going to have increased scrutiny, but I'm not sure continually canceling games is the way to go about that.
Well, hopefully they will. That means we'll get another game. Hopefully it will be good in 2020 instead of one in 2022. Maybe we'll get one in 2022 as well. But I mean, that game seemed like it was too ambitious for EA. And I can't really fault them for that. The thing that I would hope for is that they actually create games. I mean, we do have a Jedi Fallen Order coming, hopefully, unless things change, from Respawn at the end of this year. So there's one game that I'm really hoping will be interesting and good for the Star Wars franchise. Yeah, exactly. That's a new hope for this franchise, this IP. Right. So, yeah, that was also unexpected, but it's such a big decision to make when you don't have all the cards in your hand. When you don't know everything about it, it's hard for me to fault EA for canceling that Vancouver game, because I don't know how big it was or how. But at the same time, I understand people thinking, dude, like Star Wars for like years, we've gotten two multiplayer games, and we need the narrative aspect. So
yeah, I think in context, it's not great. If this was just a one-off, then people would probably be more forgiving.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I agree. Well, to hold us off, we have it was kind of confluence of releases coming out at the in February and March that we had a lot of marketing pushes for, and I call them marketing pushes because this is what they are. We all of a sudden started seeing lots of videos and reveals and stuff on a number of games, and the one that caught my eye the most is Anthem, of course. So the VIP demo is being made available at the end of this week, so I'll talk about the game a little bit more next episode when I've actually played it. I did want to mention a little bit about this game, what I got out of the videos. I've watched a lot of them, as I mentioned many times. I'm a big Destiny fan, and this is essentially BioWare's Destiny. And it looks like there's a lot to like from what we've seen now. I think the way, if we look at the way they're structuring their communications plan, I think it's looking like they have a lot of confidence with the game. I still have a lot of reservations, but looking at all of it, I got more hyped for it, and I ended up pre-ordering it to get access to the demo for work, of course.
For research purposes,
exactly. But the giving a lot of content creators access to it ahead of time and releasing it, you know, of course it's a marketing plan, so communications plan, you have NDAs that follow each other, so you have a constant stream of information, but I don't think you do that. You give such wide access to these parts of the game if you don't think the game is good. I think
you have to be confident in how it's feeling right now and showing off features that are clearly ready ahead of time without need for too much of a crunch right at the end, hopefully.
Exactly, yeah. and so the content creators we've seen, the YouTubers, seem pretty positive about it. A couple of things I noted, and then there's going to be the beta, which is essentially a test for the networking, restricted one first, and then a week later you have the open one. And a couple of things that I noted, I'm sure some people have questions because this is one of the big releases of the beginning of the year. One interesting thing, game design-wise, is that some of the abilities of each character, each class, each armor, are actually loot. And I thought that was pretty interesting and a novel way of doing it. Your classes, of course, have different abilities, and some of them are loot. And so you have to loot the ability, which is, it's a weapon, essentially, but it's an ability on cooldown, like all of these hero slash shooter games are. And so you can loot different types of abilities. So you might loot a different type of thing that changes the way you play. I think this is a really cool way of approaching that loot grind, which of course is going to be central to the game. There are not going to be any random microtransactions and no gameplay affecting microtransactions. There might be new classes / armors at some point, and maybe expansions and stuff like that, but there aren't going to be loot boxes or those kinds of things. It's only going to be cosmetic, like armor looks changing stuff that you can choose to buy and then buy. You don't have to buy a loot box and hope you get the one you like. So I think a lot of people are going to be happy with that. One thing I noticed, the VO, the conversations are kind of terrible. Not the actors, the characters you're speaking to are fine. The way your character speaks feels completely disconnected from the way the conversation is going. Like, they're all cheery and happy in the way that it felt weird. So that kind of stuck out and kind of has a little bit of an implication in the care they've put in the single player story, I think, the single part, single player part.
Yeah, that does kind of raise questions about the writing, I guess.
Yes. Or at least, you know, the recording, the way they've worked with the actors to record this.
So. That will make a big difference if you feel completely, I don't know, disconnected. It will ruin any immersion. So I hope that's not going to be too widespread, or they fix it a bit.
I've heard people say it's not all the time, but everything I've seen was like, someone is, first of all, there's this whole cryptic talk about like, oh, the anthem of life is kind of like Destiny, like the story doesn't really make sense from what I've seen. I haven't played the game. Maybe it's going to be good, but... And then you have the your character that you're playing who goes like, oh yeah, that's really great. And you're like, it, I don't know, it feels very weird. Early impression, yeah. We'll see how it works out.
It's strange. Anthem's a weird one with marketing because I feel like it's been a very constant, steady flow of information. Like every few weeks, they've been very open and that's great. Yeah. But I kind of wonder if they need to actually kind of hold back some more things so that when they do... say something, it's more of a big deal. Do you know what I mean? Are they kind of flooding?
Yeah. I think the everything they've been talking about is early game. You know, it's game fundamentals, systems, moment to moment gameplay, and it's true they haven't left anything. It seems a lot to discover in the game, but maybe there's stuff happening later in the game that are different. That's my
true.
Hope,
maybe
least.
We don't even know. Maybe we've just seen the tip of the iceberg.
And all the environment we've seen are kind of samey, so maybe there are some other environments that you will discover when you play the game. And the most important things in those games, as I always say, is the replayability loop. And that is where the game is made or broken, because people are going to play for 20 hours, whatever, get to max level, and then the real game starts. That's how it works in those games. And if that isn't good, and we haven't seen a lot of that, if that isn't good, then the game might fall on its face. But we'll see. Mm. I'm hopeful. I'm yeah, definitely
not long
more
left
hopeful.
Now.
You're what, sorry?
Not long left now until we find out. It's
yes.
Amazing.
A month. I'm very excited.
It's going to be a busy one, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, The Division is coming out like 3 weeks after The Division 2. They made a big deal about having reworked PvP. Like, the Dark Zones are different. It's the PvPvE part of that game. And you have, like, a proper PvP, like, I don't know, Battlegrounds in The Division 2. So there's some of that. There was a giant video about a 10-minute video from Metro Exodus, which, honestly, I don't know about that game. I mean, I don't think it's for me, but...
Yeah, I think I'll give it a whirl because I haven't played a Metro game before, but there is a very big kind of void. I'm feeling that I need like a post-apocalyptic game in my life at the moment. And it does look really kind of hideously ugly, but beautiful at the same time.
It's a beautiful depiction of an ugly world.
Exactly, yeah, no. So I'm quite interested to see how that works.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just not for me, but...
That's fair enough.
So you saw that 10-minute video?
Yeah, I did. I thought the thing I remember most from that is the kind of beginning with like the red footprints in the snow. Uh-huh. And that's quite striking.
Oh, wait, maybe it's a different video then, because the one I saw was in the desert.
Okay.
So
there have been a few lately. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's Metro. I think the people who are waiting, and it's beautiful and all of that, but yeah, I don't think it's going to be for me. I'm going to be flying in my Iron Man suit in Anthem, so I won't have time for Exodus.
That'll be the great divide. Exactly. Between the two.
The other one I did want to mention was Mortal Kombat 11, which, I mean, it's Mortal Kombat, but...
Yeah, that's the way to describe it.
Pretty much. That's what you need to say about it. It's Mortal Kombat. I did want to mention that the ways... they find ways of making the game more violent and kind of disgusting.
Have
every
you seen
time.
The new the new death animation?
There's a million of
that,
them.
That was they've got a new one that's kind of been doing the rounds where someone gets their face kind of punched off. So they get hit in the back of the head and the front of their face flies off and their brain kind of follows behind it. It's I don't know how they come up with this.
You mean the face, like the actual skin of the face flies off.
That flies off and then shortly followed by the brain tailing off.
You know, when I saw that thing last week, I immediately tweeted, I think the entire company it has bonus incentives on coming up with gruesome ways of killing the characters in the game. Like, everyone
maybe it's
must
like
be
an in-house competition. Everyone puts in their little suggestion.
I mean, the one that I can't remember, the one with the face and brain flying off, but the one that struck me was there's a new character that controls blood. Essentially, she can, like, she has complete control over blood everywhere. And one of her fatalities...
That's a bit OP in Mortal Kombat, isn't it?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, well, I mean, they're all... yeah, you're right. But so one of the fatalities, I guess, she does is she drains the blood out... If you have kids, just put them away for like 30 seconds. She drains the blood out of the body of her enemy. So already you're kind of dead at that point. So she drains it out. Then... freezes the blood into giant spikes and then stabs the lifeless body of her enemy with those giant spikes of that enemy's own blood. And then she like projects one last spike into the head that comes out the other side with an eye attached to it. Like, it is. Oh my God.
I think describing these animations over podcast is possibly more entertaining than the actual animations.
And actually seeing them, yeah. It's weird because anyone would be horrified by, and probably is horrified by, imagine someone who doesn't know games listening to this and you're like, you actually enjoy these things? What is wrong with you?
This is what, yeah, I know, conservatives imagine when they think of violent video games. So.
And I guess they're not wrong, but except there's a really interesting line that Mortal Kombat manages to toe between the incredibly gruesome, which, I mean, it's definitely on the line of gruesome, but at the same time, it's cartoony enough that it doesn't...
It's very self-aware. It knows it's horrible and taking things too far, but I think it knows that it's silly and... I don't know. It's not realistic at all. Like, this would never happen. A face would never fly out with a brain following. Like, it's just silly. So I think there's a space for it. It's not my kind of cup of tea, but there it is nonetheless.
I think it goes so far, it becomes outrageous. And that's what makes it almost comical. Yeah, you're right. It's too. So anyway, those were the ones I wanted to mention. I'm sure there are others, but those are the ones that I noticed. And for those who don't remember, Anthem is coming out February 22nd, and the first VIP demo, if you have pre-ordered or prepaid the game, is at the end of this week, so on the 25th, I believe. It's about 36 hours. There's another one open for all a week later, which I only found out about after I had paid for the game. But you know what? It's for research, so I had to do it. Metro is, when is Metro? Isn't it February 22nd?
So 15th? I think it got moved. Yeah, no.
You're right.
All sorts of shuffling around. Yeah.
You're right. On the 15th, and Mortal Kombat, the Division is like March 15th, and Mortal Kombat is April 23rd, I think. So you have that to look forward to. There's another topic I wanted to cover, because we talked about the games we were expecting last week, and we didn't talk about console. Well, we talked about, like, quote-unquote fake consoles, like the Atari VCS, which is coming out in July, which, okay. But the traditional consoles, we didn't talk about that, and there's a chance that they might be announced at this year's maybe E3 for Microsoft. So what do you think? Are we gonna see new consoles announced / released this year?
Whatever I say is going to age really poorly. I'll look back at this in a few years, I'll be like, oh no, got that wrong. But okay, we'll make some predictions, I guess. I think Sony's gonna have a quiet one this year. They've already pulled out of E3, as we know. I think they're just going to kind of let the PS4 kind of peter out and have a final year, and then maybe next year we'll hear things from them about the
Sony one. Quiet, I see.
Yes, I think. But there's a part of me that wonders if Microsoft is going to try and pip Sony by saying something about the next Xbox, the E3, because it's going to have the stage to itself this time.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if they planned that far in advance, because it would have been quite recent that they would have found out about Sony dropping out, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's been a couple of months. Sony announced they were going to be E3. So mm-hmm. I think if they, I mean, announcement wise, it would mean like we're assuming they would announce it at E3, but I think that's a fair
assessment. That is a big stretch.
Yeah. No, I mean, if they were to announce it, it would be at E3 is what I mean.
That's true. Yeah.
I think that's fair, because that's obviously the place where they would make the most noise. And whether Sony is there or not, that I think would make sense. But so they would plan it in advance, either this year or next year. They mentioned last year that they were working on it. So if they say something this year, I think it would need to be a full presentation, full on, like, this is what the console is, this is what it can do, here's some target or even actual gameplay.
I think it makes sense for Microsoft to do that, because I think undeniably PlayStation has dominated this generation in terms of sales, and also just the kind of the games it's had as exclusives. Microsoft's been doing some interesting things with the Game Pass, and obviously like backwards compatibility is great, but I think it does need some new IP, and it needs to kind of grab the attention back. And I think maybe announcing something this year would be a good way to do that.
Well, I completely agree. I think it's an opportunity that is difficult for them to not take advantage of. Even if they hadn't planned on it, I think they did, but even if they hadn't, the fact that Sony isn't there, if they let go of that opportunity and don't announce anything, it would be the biggest missed opportunity in the history of video games. Well, maybe not that far, but... And of course, we all know that, as you mentioned, Sony is doing a lot better this generation, and Microsoft is eager to see this generation end. So not only do I think they could announce the new console in detail, but I think they could potentially release it this year. It's been 6 years since the Xbox One came out. It came out in 2013, same with the PS4. 6 years is a decent amount of time for the for a generation. It's not the longest one, but it's happened before. And you know, it's not like so many people already own an Xbox One. I know some people do. Don't email me, but you know, there would be less people than in the Xbox 360 generation that would have to think, oh, I already have one, I don't need a. And taking Sony, taking away the initiative from Sony, who wants this generation to last as long as possible, even though they're preparing the next one. I don't think Sony is going to announce or release anything, obviously, this year. They're going to do that next year. But Microsoft would have a year and one year of head time with this. This year, if they release it, they are alone on the market. Mm-hmm. So everyone is going to buy, well, not everyone, but you know, the core gamers who want to get the latest stuff, I think they're going to buy one. Especially, I'm wondering if this discless Xbox One that we've heard about might come pre-equipped with the kind of hardware that will allow their streaming service to work. You know, we've had rumors about the fact that the next generation would be a dual offering of actual standard console and streaming service that would have some hardware to mitigate the lag issues somehow. I don't know how it works. It's probably magic. But if that new Xbox One is released with that, maybe the other ones could work with a streaming service as well. Not as well, maybe without the lag mitigating thing. I don't know. But
yeah, I think it would definitely be like a single player game only thing for the streaming, I think, most of the time. I think multiplayer games might be challenging.
Probably,
get a bit too much lag.
It would be, I mean, I think the streaming thing would work for people who don't want, like, the actual console. But most people like us would buy the actual console. But if you tell people, you know what, the console you already have, your PC, your whatever, you can already play on the Xbox 2 or the Xbox Scarlet, which is the code name for it. It's backwards compatible with all of these games, Xbox One and many Xbox 360. I think there's okay. Let's leave the improbable scenarios of streaming aside.
Yes.
If they release the console this year, they have a significant advantage over the PlayStation 5. Sony will have to begrudgingly announce and release it next year. I think if they could have their way, Sony would be happy to wait until 2021. So anyway, my prediction, I'm going to be bold and say announcement and release this year of the next generation of Xbox consoles. So
wow. There we go. We'll come back to this in a few months.
We'll see how and laugh.
Probably.
All right. That was all of the big topics that we wanted to cover. A few tidbits of other news. Oh, before the news, actually the games we've been playing. What have you been playing aside from Fortnite? Although you can't talk about Fortnite.
Honestly, I've talked so much about Fortnite. I'll give some space to another game for now. I literally just got a Switch.
Yeah, congratulations. Yes, I'm so happy for you.
It's a really cute little kind of Pikachu and Eevee one with the kind of patterns, and it's got Pikachu and Eevee sat on the dock. It's adorable. So with that, I got Pokemon Let's Go. So I've been playing that a bit behind the curve with everyone, but it's so relaxing and it's just really charming. It's definitely not a really tactically challenging game, at least thus far. But it's just, I kind of just like tickling my Eevee, like giving it a stroke, and it sings at me, and I'm like, yeah, this is the kind of relaxing thing I need. Other than that, I played quite a lot of Red Dead Redemption 2 over Christmas. I had time to sit down and properly give it some attention.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't finished it though. it's a long game.
Red Dead Redemption 2 is the one that's looking at me reproachfully from my game list and telling me, why aren't you playing me? You know you should be. I mean, I'm a big game for last year. You haven't finished me yet. Why? And yeah. I look at this and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to play Mario. Sorry. Like, this is...
it's a big commitment. I think every time I sit down to play it, I also have to remember what the controls are.
Which is
essentially... I end up just punching my horse and things like that. It upsets me quite a lot.
I just saw a tweet from a friend who was playing the game, and the title of the tweet was, how do you get on the horse again? Is it L2? No. And in the video, as you mentioned, he's actually close to the horse and punches the horse in the face. It's like, how? It's... Anyway.
I'd love like Arthur Morgan in the world just being like, oh, I'm sorry, it's just really easy to punch a horse. Just meant to get on it, you know?
Exactly. I got confused. I meant to get on the horse and I punched it. There's that.
I guess the other one has been Fallout 76. I've been looking at that again. Yeah. It's in a really interesting place at the moment. As you know, I've been like looking at all of the dev room stuff that's been going on with it and the duplication.
Yeah, so I heard about this. Can you tell us a little bit more? It was like a big hack that happened and Bethesda got involved.
Yeah, exactly. With every Bethesda game in recent memory, I think going back to like Morrowind, there's been a developer room in the games, and you can normally access them via console command because it's like a single player game. You can just go in and type the coordinates and pop in there, and they basically have every item in the game, a bit of space for you to test them. It's so that the developers can go and try out items in the game, and obviously that's not a problem if it's a single player game and you choose to go in there and take items from it and use it in the world. But in a multiplayer game, they left it in. I don't know if they thought no one would find it or just that people wouldn't be able to access it.
Haven't people found it in every single other Bethesda game in the past? Like,
yeah, exactly. Well, I guess before people accessed it through console commands, so they thought, oh well, you can't do that on Fallout 76, so no one will find it. I honestly have no idea what they thought. Maybe they did have some kind of protections on it, because the people who did access the dev room, it has to be said, the vast majority, from what I've heard, used cheat engine, so like third party software to kind of get the coordinates and teleport in there. This is what I've heard from most people. A few people have claimed they glitched in, but the ones who were taking items certainly were using like cheat software to do it. Right. But I guess you have to be prepared for that to happen in an online game. Yeah, so people were taking the items out and kind of using these other duplication glitches to make copies of them and then giving them to friends and trading them, or apparently some were being sold on eBay. Certainly there were people on Reddit were trying to flog them, like these paints that hadn't even been released in the game yet. Some weapons that hadn't come out yet. Things like that.
Terrible.
Yeah, no, it's
so I'm guessing that they have all gotten banned, or
right. So what Bethesda started doing was before they officially addressed this, people were sharing an email around saying that they got banned, well, suspended because they sensed that they'd gone to that location. Hmm. So the accounts that went in would get banned because they'd trip something that would tell Bethesda, and then they got suspended. So what people did was they created what they call mule accounts. To go in, grab all of the stuff, and then transfer it to another account before of that course. Account got suspended. Yeah, because people are sneaky. It's kind of impressive how good they are at getting around Bethesda, like watching this strange game of cat and mouse. Mm. So yeah, and I don't know. Bethesda's kind of hinted that this is a weird thing. We don't know whether Bethesda is still just banning people who have entered, because they gave an English language statement which said they're banning people who went in. But the Polish Fallout Facebook account is saying that they're now finding people who have the unreleased items or items from the dev room and just suspending those accounts as well. So yeah, some people are worried that they might have inadvertently traded for an item that's from the dev room and might get suspended. But yeah,
realizing, yeah. Like thinking, looks cool. They don't know where it came from.
Exactly. Like, a few people are worried about that.
It's okay, but, from the back of the truck. It's you know, it's still good. Of course, it's just someone lost it.
Yeah, no. Yeah. But Bethesda said that if that does happen and you've been suspended and you didn't go in the room, then you should just contact support.
Right.
So there is apparently a way out, but that would be annoying if that did happen to you. But so far from the people you've hacked in that I know, they haven't been suspended yet. I think a few of them have had suspensions for duplication glitches. But yeah, no, the account banning is still happening if you go in there, basically.
and it's still in there. They haven't fixed that. They're just banning people who go in there. It's
exactly,
Fallout 76 is so poor.
They've closed off the chest so people can't take items out anymore. You can still walk around the room. Oh, and Wooby. We forgot about Wooby.
What's Wooby?
Wooby is the only human NPC in Fallout 76, and he is stuck in the dev room. you really couldn't make this up. When I thought it was fake when I first saw it. I was like, there's no way. But it is, it's true. And some people were saying, oh, is this a sign they're going to add human NPCs in? But I reckon they just took Wooby from kind of Fallout 4's code and put him in the dev room so that the devs could test weapons and things on him.
Oh my God, this is so horrible. It's like The Sims with some kind of sadistic developer.
He's just stuck in this dark dev room until he gets beaten up by either a dev or a hacker.
It's not even like, first there was the devs and then everyone got in and started beating up on poor Whoopi. Okay, well, you know, I really wonder if that game is getting so much attention because of what it is, and it's kind of a snowball and keeps getting bigger, if it's really, I have a hard time discerning whether or not that's it, or, you know, it's just a game that really has issues attention.
Some people have definitely been harsh on it, I would say, than others, because other online games have these kind of things, the duplication errors and kind of gray markets where people sell weapons on eBay. I have actually done this. I tested it out. I bought a gun from a duplication.
For research purposes.
Yeah, exactly, for research. It was really weird. you go on eBay, you kind of arrange to meet the person, the seller, in-game in Fallout. You friend them, you go into the server with them, and then fast travel to the location. And yeah, this guy was just kind of crouched next to a table in a train station. It was like, here, take it from the table. I was like, okay. And then, the gun was just in there, and then he gave me a thumbs up, and I was like, well, there we go. I've got this gun now. Yeah.
Illegal gun, and you could get banned for it.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Well,
that would be unsurprising.
Can,
I mean,
you
like,
can
yeah.
put a, you can pull out your journalist card, like, ah, oh, I'm a reporter. I did research.
I'm not sure they'd be that happy with me right now to help.
All right. Well, that was Fallout 76, I suppose. So for me, what did I play? New Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe. I mentioned that game in last week's episode, and I was true to my word, bought it, played it a whole lot, and it brought me the kind of joy I was hoping for. It's just, I think Mario games might be my comfort games. Like, I have such
a
history.
They are like a comfort blanket. They're always familiar, and like, they change a bit, but the core is the same. And they always just have like a nice, good feeling to them.
You know what to expect. There's the flowers that bounce with the music and go, bap! And you know, they have the little dancing moves, and it's so cute and lovely. And it's like a nice break from, I was going to say other games, but maybe the world. It's a lovely time. And you know what you're in for. It's just, so I've been loving it. I should note that I didn't play New Super Mario or either you or the Wii version or any of those, maybe the 3DS version at one point. But so that was fun. I played the demo for Resident Evil 2. Those are demos, I guess.
Have you found the workaround for it? So I think some people figured out how to keep playing it.
Oh, really? No, but honestly, I wouldn't really want to. It's fine.
You've had enough for now.
I'm one of the
appetite sated.
More than sated. I mean, no, that's a bit harsh. I'm one of the few people who doesn't love Resident Evil 2. And I have to say, it is absolutely admirable the way they are taking the core of what that game is and bringing it into a modern UI/controls world. It feels like that game that was made today, which it actually is, but the way it's executed feels like the game from, what is it, 20 years ago, maybe more. And so that is absolutely commendable. But it's the good/bad part for me is that it's still Resident Evil 2. You have the stupid plants and the combining of the plants, and it's Resident Evil 2. If you like RE2, you're gonna love it. If you don't, like me,
I'm probably gonna stay away. I can't deal with horror games. It's hard. I could watch horror movies fine, anything scary fine. I think the scariest thing I've ever touched is Little Nightmares. I tried playing Outlast one time, and I got up to the house, into the gate, and I took one look and went, nope. And I just shut down the game.
I have to say that I used to play these games quite a bit. I played a little bit of Resident Evil 7 a couple of years ago, and it took me about, roughly the same time, 7 minutes, and I was like, nope. I won't. I don't know what it is, but I have to say Resident Evil 2 is gory. Oh my god, it is. Oof, it's harsh. It's really harsh. So if you like that, then so I would say probably stay away, Emma. That's
not one for me. I'll stick with the Pokemon. It's
going to be. And I'll stick with Super Mario Brothers. Nintendo is everywhere. Between the Stars, a game that my friend Scott recommended to me, not for me either. I'm not gonna go into it. Call of Duty Blackout is free to play for 6 days, the Battle Royale mode, and my assessment, which I tweeted, is it is a Battle Royale game.
I think I saw this tweet.
That's what
I do enjoy Blackout. Again, like, we had a period when I broke away from Fortnite, and at one point I even declared that I preferred Blackout to Fortnite because it had, when it just launched, there was a lot of hype behind it and everyone at the office was playing it. And it's just the gunplay was so nice. Fortnite is not got good gunplay. It's probably the worst part of it. so it was just really refreshing to hit someone and you know it's hit. And it feels really solid. But they haven't really maintained it or changed it that much. They added like a boat, and there are some new modes coming now which are kind of a bit like the Fortnite modes. We've got like respawning that's just been added, which is quite good because it's a bit easier if you're new to it. You don't instantly die. You're sniped by someone across the map. Basically, if you're in a team, so long as one of you survives, when the
you
next
get a
kind
number
of circle
of respawns?
Forms,
oh right,
then, yeah, okay, then yeah. The rest of your squad respawns.
Oh, that's an interesting.
So, yeah, it should make it really hectic at the end as well, because if everyone's just kind of trying to survive and keep their squad in, you could end up with like several teams all squished into this tiny circle.
Yeah, that's an interesting. You know, I think Battle Royale might be the most versatile game mode design that we've seen, and that's why it's working out for so many different people.
Yeah,
and
often I prefer these like alternative playlist versions of it to the kind of core idea. Yeah, I think really nice. And people are just riffing on it now, and it's great because you get some really unique game modes, and it's quite a good testing platform for them. I think you get so many people who are into Battle Royale now that you can try out these weird modes that would normally get no attention.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, it wasn't my thing, but it's like when I was talking about Destiny and Anthem earlier, some people were like, yeah, that's just talk about something else. It's not my thing. Well, Battle Royale is that for me.
It's a thing. It's here, yeah.
Yeah,
it's probably not going away for a while.
I am not in the majority here, definitely. I don't have any illusions that most people are like me. But and I also played CrossCode a little bit, which is weird, and I want to play more. A lot of people have been talking about it. It's a game that came out at the end, maybe fall or early winter 2018, last year. And it's this weird single-player game that puts you in the body of an avatar of a character in an MMO game where you also have other players, which aren't actual other players because you're playing it solo, but they are written as other players playing that game. And a lot of people have been talking about it. I'm very curious to see more. It's got some 16-bit graphics, which are not even that fancy. They're just kind of 16-bit graphics, and it controls very well. It's a bit weird, as I said. It's a JRPG type thing made by Germans, I believe. and it's strange. And I think it might have been one that came under the radar, unfortunately, last year. I'm going to play it more. There's a demo available. I bought the game. It's on Steam. And it's not coming to Switch. So it's almost like a relief.
That's a shame.
Well, I mean, I would love to play it on Switch, but then I would have to wait until it comes out on Switch. And it's apparently not because it started with HTML. And it's like, so it's kind of a relief. I'm like, okay, I can buy it on Steam. It's fine. I'm not going to have to pay for it again on Switch if I want to play it there. So CrossCode is the name of that game. Oh, yeah. And it seems a lot of people are liking it. So
I actually hadn't heard of that one before. So I'll go check that out as well.
Yeah, if that's your kind of thing, I think you might want to. If 16-bit graphics and kind of an MMO, but not really, but it's written like it, and it's very humorous, and it makes reference. It's very clever. It's a clever game. So, right. So, very quickly, let's run through a bunch of other tidbits of news. Rocket League is getting full cross-platform, including PS4. So, Rocket League fans are happy, I'm sure. The Switch might be getting, we don't know when, but there's some data mining that suggests it's probably going to get some Super NES games at some point for the online service, which at that point I might be okay with paying for the online service, which I'm not yet.
I think it's a good way for me to try out some of these things, because do you want to hear something really sickening? When the SNES was released, I was -6. I think it came out in 1990.
Oh my God. I realized you were young, but
Real baby.
You know what? When this NES was released, it was like my third console.
Sorry. That was brutal.
Yeah, it's like okay, maybe even more than third if you count the ones. Anyway, the third one that I actually owned. Okay, so and I actually imported it from Japan and tested it for a fanzine. Do you have that word in English? I don't know. Fan magazine.
No, not sure.
It's a French word.
That's good. I like that. It's a nice portmanteau.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, I wasn't, you know, I was, I was going to say I wasn't very old, but I wasn't that young either. But I remember thinking, so this thing, you can't really get it in France unless you pay an exorbitant amount for it. It was like all of my money for, I don't know, 3 years worth of Christmas and birthdays. But and I remember getting it. And so I was thinking, you can't get it. So is it worth testing? And my thought process at the time was, well, you have car magazines that test like Lamborghinis and stuff like that, and you can't get it when you're a normal human. So why not do that with consoles? And I figured, you know, so I'm going to test it and talk about it in that magazine. And I to this day, I remember the amount of justifications that I had to do for to talk about games. Anyway, a little bit of an insight into the story of Patrick's video gamer life. So yeah, anyway, Super NES games, you will come back on the show and let us know what you think about those ancient things. I have to say, even myself, I think SNES games are great. Like 16-bit era, you still have some pretty good things. 8-bit, even myself, I don't go there. It's like... Yeah. Like pixel art games today can evoke the aesthetic
same mood
of
and art style, yeah.
But they're not the same. Like if you look back at the actual 8-bit games, I think only people who have severe cases of pathological nostalgia can still like those games. And I'm kind of angry.
Yeah, I think there's a limit to how far back I can go before I start getting irritated. And definitely, if you've played something before, you're much more forgiving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So SNES, I think you might enjoy, but
okay.
What else? So Netflix is saying that Fortnite is a threat more than HBO, which was an interesting way of looking at it, and that doesn't have a lot to do with video games directly. Except, I'm wondering, this is complete speculation, but Netflix knows a thing or two about streaming. What if they were to also, like, you know, everyone and their mothers and fathers and aunts and uncles develop a game streaming service? It would be an interesting way of looking at...
Possibly. They've already got a couple of kind of interactive stories. I think there was Black Mirror, and I think they also... There was the Minecraft thing they did
with
Telltale. So I think I did read somewhere that there weren't any plans so far for Netflix to kind of go further down the games route.
But
you never
what
know.
If there were yeah, no problem. But it's interesting that Netflix is looking at the landscape in terms of free time, like available free time, and not like who is streaming
eyeballs,
videos.
Exactly. People are calling it. It's a really gross way to put it.
I think that's a mode in Mortal Kombat 11, actually. And so it also could relate eyeballs to that other story. I'm not even sure I want to touch it, but I think I probably should mention it because it's so weird. The lawsuit between Gearbox, specifically Randy Pitchford, and his former lawyer, the general counsel of Gearbox, who... So the lawyer... put forward a complaint towards Pitchford and Gearbox, alleging that Pitchford took $12 million worth of a bonus, which is a big deal at that company because he had to do it secretly because the entire company is supposed to have bonuses indexed on the company's performance, including him. And so he went around and did that secretly as an advance on, I can't remember which game, probably one of the...
I think it was the Borderlands title. In the lawsuit, it was kind of framed as, oh yeah, Pitchford was taking... like royalties directly from kind of Borderlands that should have gone into the development of it. It was tied so that it should have gone to the staff, basically.
Which is weird in itself. And that is one of the allegations of that document, which it's kind of... The next one makes you think the ex-general counsel Callender kind of threw everything in there to get attention. And I hate that I'm going to mention it, but I don't know that we can not mention it because this is still something relatively credible. He's an officer of the court, and so he has to be a little bit like serious in the way he formulates those documents. Other people might not, but he's a lawyer. So he also alleges that Pitchford had a USB drive with documents from the company, secret documents, and a number of pieces of underage pornography on it, which then Pitchford went like 3 days before the document was released, which the timing is can't be coincidental. He went on a podcast, which is a magician's podcast, to say that, yes, he does like a certain kind of porn, and he downloaded a video that he saw, and that's the thing that was on the thing, but on the USB drive, but it wasn't underage, and that part is obnoxious and outrageous, and I've never I've always
in my notes I've just written yikes in all caps for this part.
That's essentially the reaction.
Gosh, it's bad that it's been kind of corroborated. I think it was Pitchford said it was kind of barely legal, only 18. The quotes are just odd. They're just bizarre. Like, he said, this is not a sex worker. This is a effing magician. I don't know if you're allowed swearing on this. I won't. Yeah, but okay. This is a fucking magician quote. It's really weird. I don't know anyone else who kind of get away with this kind of language. I don't know. Or just kind of openly admitting that kind of behavior.
Because he knew it was coming somehow.
Possibly.
And the thing, I mean, I've always thought Pitchford was a little bit weird, but I mean, anyway, it's going to be discussed in the courts. Probably actually what's going to happen is that they're going to work out a deal and the lawyer is going to get some money because there obviously is something there. Maybe not everything he's claiming. Maybe it's going to go all the way to the end of the process in the courts, but yeah, there you go. That's something that happened.
It's definitely the weirdest lawsuits I've ever seen.
In the gaming world, that's not something used to, thankfully. And finally, I did want to mention, because we've been talking about NetEase and Tencent a lot, I wanted to mention this report by the South China Morning Post, which you've probably been hearing more and more about if you're into tech, because obviously China. But Tencent had obviously huge growth year over year and on investments gains. And they have been investing, the report is that they made over 160 investments in 2018 in, I believe it's in games. It might not be just games, but between them, I'm sure a good amount of them is in games, and between them and NetEase, if you're wondering why we keep hearing about Western companies that get some money from either of those companies, I'm sure there are others, it's because China is expanding, and those gaming and internet giants are bigger and bigger players. I think we'll have to get Daniel Ahmad at some point, our friend analyst, gaming industry analyst, who specializes on China, to explain a bit more how that could change the landscape and whether it's going mobile games
Tencent
for everyone.
I think they've definitely been looking more to the West for investments. They were anyway, but particularly because China's been quite harsh on its approvals process for video games lately. And it is a worry. And Tencent stock takes a tumble every time something happens in China to do with that. I wouldn't be surprised if they're hoping to kind of spread their investments out so that it'll make it a bit more stable. But
And what are the consequences? If you have Tencent as an investor, as a majority investor, maybe not a minority, but does it mean the company in being Chinese will impose a certain, I'm not even talking about their needs financially, like you need to put something out that we can also market in China, from like a platform standpoint, obviously mobile comes to mind, but from an editorial standpoint, like, are they gonna, I don't know.
It's difficult to say. Tencent is very mysterious. Like, there is very little that I have found kind of talking about the culture or the thinking with that company. It's just so big that
it's a giant.
It's hard to really know. Yeah.
All right. Well, on that big question mark, I think we're going to declare the end of the episode. thank you so much, Emma, for being on. It was great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. If not just for the Mortal Kombat descriptions.
There's definitely something there. Maybe a new audio format where you just describe Mortal Kombat fatalities. That could be very successful.
Yeah, guess a fatality based on the description.
Would you tell people where they can find more of you if they
haven't gotten enough? Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, my Twitter is @GoneEFK. And yeah, you can find me on the Eurogamer website. There'll probably be a news article I've put up about Fortnite. I don't know.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I will include the link to your Twitter account in the show notes. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Of course, if you want to see pictures of giant snowy landscapes, as it's like minus 14 degrees centigrade today outside. It's terrifying. But it makes for pretty pictures. So there's that. And that's about it. I think we'll be back in a couple of weeks. And hopefully I will have accessed the Anthem beta demo. And I can talk about that. And I'm sure of other weird lawsuits that will have happened in the world of games. So until then, enjoy your games and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.